Hey guys, welcome to the Fellowship Greenville Students Podcast. This week, Matt Dinsky continues our series, Relationship Goals, where we'll talk about friendships, dating, and marriage. Matt talks about dating this week and how culture blinds us to the good that God has made within relationships. Matt talks through categories of dating that culture creates for us and how we can change those categories to ones that are more God-honoring. Matt goes through certain verses in Songs of Solomon that relate to chemistry, communication, compatibility, and boundaries. We hope you enjoy this message.
All right, guys, welcome. I'm so excited you guys are here. I'm excited to be continuing our series on relationships tonight. We have been navigating over the past few weeks some foundational things, and then last week we talked about friendships, what is a good friend, how to be a good friend, and tonight, maybe you watched the Instagram story, maybe you just heard it through the rumor mill. We are talking about dating. Sheesh. Which, I'm probably as nervous as some of you guys are, to be honest. Which is hard. Like, let me go ahead and confess to you, it is hard because dating is not a biblical concept. All right? It is a fairly modern form of pursuit, fairly modern within the past few centuries. It is not a biblical concept. It is very much a cultural concept, but it is so normal that we just think, oh, that's what you do, right? So it's kind of hard to speak to this because there's really no like, oh, let's go to this Bible passage. Here's what it has to say about dating. Like, it's not really there. So we kind of have to gather a lot of passages and then look into the principles that the Bible is speaking about dating. And here's where I want to go. Here's where I want to go tonight. I want to go to a book in the Old Testament. You can already start trying to find it. You may need a table of contents because it's a little obscure. But Song of Solomon. Never in my history of doing student ministry have I preached out of Song of Solomon. Those of you who are giggling know why. It's steamy, man. It is spicy, baby. Like, it is, ooh. Calm down, girl. Like, I'm blushing just right now. But we're going to be in it tonight, and it's going to be good. We're going to gather some principles from the Song of Solomon. So, I have up here four categories. Tell me if these seem familiar. What is that? What am I hearing? Someone's phone? Can we silence that? I don't know what that is. It sounds like someone's like jamming to some country music somewhere over here. No? Okay. I have up here four categories. Tell me if these sound familiar. First, we have attraction. Yes. Confident, yes. I've been there. I am there. I am that. They find me that, okay? Very confident. First, we have attraction. This is where it starts. Yes? Then we move to... I should have painted little quotation marks. Then we move to talking. We've been talking, but now we are talking. We have this very, very familiar category. It's complicated, baby. It's complicated. This is home base for many of my brethren in the room right now. I don't know where I stand with her, but we attracted. Okay, so... It's complicated, baby. So it's complicated, and then we have this ripe category right here. Physical. Physical. Y'all are faking. Y'all are faking in this room tonight. Y'all are like, ew, physical. Why would we ever want that, right? We're Christians, and we don't believe in being physical. Come on, let's be real. It's there. And this tends to be the natural progression. Yeah, I'm attracted to you. Let's get it talking. I don't know. We're kind of confused, so let's fool around, right? Like, this is kind of the natural flow. And maybe some of you in the room have been in this flow. Maybe you are in this flow right now. Maybe you've been in it multiple times. Here's the problem, though. I have this blindfold. Here I go. I have this blindfold in my hands here. You see what that says? Culture. This is the problem, is that we're so used to this flow that we actually think that this is normal. Because culture has come along and blinded us to what biblical and healthy relationships would actually look like. We've gotten so used to this through social media, through our schools, through culture, through magazines, and what, I mean, stand in the grocery store checkout line, and what you see is like 10 tips for better sex. It's like, what? Homie, you know why you need 10 tips for better sex? It's because you're not achieving the intimacy that comes through a bond of souls built on trust, because it's purely physical for you, so you need to get coached up. Yeah. Culture has blinded us to what healthy and biblical and God's plan for all this is. So you know what begins to happen, right? We tend to view this as normal, like, oh yeah, attraction, that's where it starts, and then we move to talking phase or whatever, and we get really confused, and we have a bunch of DTRs, and now we're just so lost, man. We're in no man's land. I'm in the friend zone, and I don't even know how I got here, and it's complicated, but she still flirts with me. And then last weekend, she kissed me. We don't know what to do with it. We think it's normal. Or get this. Sometimes, some of you guys are wondering, how does he see with that blind? I'm a ninja, baby, okay? I know what's up. I might have a hard time getting it in the thing there. All right, sometimes we do this right here. It starts with attraction. Ooh, boo, you looking good today. I like that. Oh, you got that new cut? You got that JJ Bunny? Okay. Yo. Oh, you went to Great Clips over the weekend, honey. Okay. It starts with attraction, and our culture just pushes and pushes and pushes the idea of sexuality and sex so much that we begin to become blinded by culture, and we think, oh, attraction should lead to being physical. That's normal. And so we move from attraction to physical, and then what happens? Ooh, it gets complicated. Because now we're super confused. We don't have a foundation of a relationship. It's purely based on physical. And in the moment, that was fun. We had a lot of fun fooling around. But the intimacy at some point needs a substance to it beyond physical. Oh, I don't know, like an emotional bond that can't be built purely on sex or being physical, and therefore we're lacking in the necessary skills of communication and trust and vulnerability and authenticity. So now we get super confused, and then we visit this like, well, I don't know what to do. Should we talk about it? Now we're all confused. You been there? I ain't gonna admit that. I almost got some. Sometimes, I don't know what that was. What was that? Sometimes it kind of gets like this too, doesn't it? Sometimes it moves from attraction to it's complicated. Oh, I'm attracted to you. I like you. But I don't even know who I really am. I don't even know where my foundation is. I don't even know what I'm about. I don't know what my future hopes and dreams are. I certainly wouldn't know how to invite you into those and help you nurture those. I wouldn't know how to partner with you in this life and head in the same direction as you and mutually pursue common goals. We're attracted to each other, but it really doesn't go much beyond that. And so it gets real, real complicated real quick. So we try to talk it out. We're trying to figure this thing out, but it keeps going back to it's complicated. We're tired of having the DTRs. We can't seem to make this relationship work, but we know we're attracted to each other. What should we do? I don't know. Should we try fooling around? I hear people who fool around really form a bond. Yeah, they do. That's how God designed it. But it doesn't bring clarity to where you're at. If anything, it makes it even more complicated. I need a double sign on the other end. More complicated. Culture has blinded us to what real relationships should be and what God says they should be. Do you know that God wants the best for you? Do you know He loves you? God is the author of sex. People, can we speak truth? Like, the church has hidden away from this truth for so long that so many people don't even consider the church when it comes to thinking about what healthy sexual relationships should look like. God is the inventor. He desires for you to have sex one day.
to be physical one day. Those desires that you have growing are not inherently wrong. It's the actions in the improper time that lead you into trouble. But culture wants us to think, no, it's all normal. Just figure it out. If it's complicated, maybe fool around it a little bit. You don't have to talk about it. If you're attracted, do something. Culture has blinded us. So what would the Word of God have to say towards this sequence? Well, first of all, I want to look at this attraction one, because the truth is it does start with attraction. I want you to know this about attraction. Attraction is not wrong. Attraction is not wrong. If you're in the room, you're like, ooh, some of these little honeys, fine. Oh, United Night Valentine's Day? Oh, what, singles should wear pink so we can mingle? Yo, other singles in the house wear pink. We'll see who's who. Attraction is not wrong. But over time, and especially in church world, we've kind of made it this taboo thing. You're attracted to them? Lust! Chill. Chill. Jesus said if a man lusts after a woman, he committed adultery in his heart. Yes, yes. Lusting is a little bit different than attraction, hombre. Like, chill. Like, God has made you to be attracted to people. Attraction is not wrong. And I don't want to stand up here and make you think it is and guilt you and be like, oh, you think people are good looking, sinner? No. Like, that is how God has made you. Tonight, we're going to be in the Song of Solomon. I just want to give you a heads up. It's a little heady at times, a little saucy. All right, but let's take a look. Song of Solomon, chapter 1, verse 2. This is this woman talking about Solomon. This is what she says. Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth. Ooh. Yo, honey. They're in the attraction phase. They're not married. Can you believe she wants him to kiss her? Oh my gosh, this woman is so far from Jesus. Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for your love is better than wine. What is she saying? She's saying, yo, I'm attracted to you. There's something about you, and I'm desiring. Brooke, you taking a picture of my slide? You'll never believe what Matt taught on in church tonight. These poor kids. It says kisses and wine in the same verse. The woman in Song of Solomon is saying about Solomon, I find you pleasant. I find you attractive. I have desires that are there. I'm drawn to you. Attraction is not wrong. In fact, all throughout the Bible, we see attraction as a principle that is normal. When God created Eve, Adam was like, yo, holla at your boy, God. He was attracted to her. Jacob, when he saw Rachel, yo, she's really nice looking. In fact, Jacob wanted to be with Rachel so badly that he basically worked for her family just so he could be around her. Like, he found her very good looking. Attraction is not wrong. I want to make this clear. Attraction is not wrong. But here's the follow-up. Attraction is not enough. Attraction is not enough. And what culture would have you believe is, no, it is. Attraction should lead to other things. And I would say, pump the brakes. Check your heart. Check your motives. Check their heart. Attraction's not wrong, but attraction is not enough. Let's take a look at a few verses. Proverbs chapter 6, verse 25. The author of this proverb is saying, yo, be careful, as though Proverbs 6:25. Do not desire her beauty in your heart, and don't let her capture you with her eyelashes. The Magnum Plus says that she got glued on there, boy. I know they're good looking, but they fall off. Don't let her lure you in. Here's what this verse is saying. Is attraction wrong? No. Attraction is not wrong, but attraction is not enough. What this verse is getting at is, do not let looks be the only thing that is capturing your heart about this person. Attraction's not wrong,
But attraction alone is not enough. Do not let looks, don't let looks, and this can work both ways. The author of the proverb is just using a woman's appeal here, but it can work both ways. Ladies, do not let a guy's looks be the only thing that captures your heart. Attraction's not wrong, but attraction is not enough. Let's take a look at Proverbs chapter 31, verse 10. Charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. What this verse is saying is like, look, yeah, charm is great, but it's deceitful. It can convince you that it's enough when in fact it's not. It's only a draw to that person, but it's not substance. Beauty is vain. Beauty fades. If we're going to talk about a real relationship that's committed for the long haul, at some point, that beauty will fade a little bit. And you need more than the beauty to keep the relationship strong. But a woman who fears the Lord, or a man who fears the Lord, that's what's to be praised. You know what this verse is saying, basically? There is no makeup that can cover bad character. Guys, there is no physique that can cover bad character. That's what this verse is getting at. Beauty fades. Charm fades. But someone who loves the Lord, that's someone to be praised. First Peter. Peter puts it like this, chapter 3, verses 3 and 4. Don't let your adorning be external, the braiding of your hair and putting on of gold jewelry and the clothing you wear. People have taken this way too literal and like, oh, see, ladies shouldn't wear jewelry. That's not what Peter is saying. He's saying, listen, don't let your adorning, don't let what people are drawn to the most, don't let your glory be everything external, the braiding of your hair, putting on of gold jewelry, the clothing you wear, but let your adorning be the hidden person of the heart with the imperishable beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which in God's sight is very precious. In other words, Peter is saying, listen, you can be attractive, ladies, you can flaunt it. Man, get your do done. Look nice. Put on the lashes if you want. I don't care. Get your nails acrylic and 3 inches long. It doesn't bother me. Do whatever you want, but let your character, let your spirit, let your heart be the main thing. And let that be what people find most beautiful about you. See, the deceitfulness of attraction is we convince ourselves that attraction is so good that that's the person I want to be with. Attraction is simply consideration plus imagination plus gravitation. I'm considering this person, I'm imagining what it would be like with this person, and I'm getting pulled towards this person. Consideration plus imagination plus gravitation, that's attraction. That's not an antidote for a healthy relationship, though. If all there is attraction, the relationship will fail. So I want you to hear me today. Attraction is not wrong, but attraction is not enough. You need to look for character. Character is what's more important than anything else. It's what the Bible teaches. Character should be what you're attracted most to. So in other words, if you're attracted to someone physically and you're like, ooh, I'm considering them. Ooh, I'm having little thoughts in my mind, imagination. Ooh, I'm just drawn towards them, slash stalk them. That's gravitation slash creepy. Then you have attraction. And what the Bible teaches is, hey, that's fine. Yeah, God made them. Boo-boo, you looking good, and God blessed it. Like, hello. However, do they have a character that's even more attractive? What are some things you should look for in someone's character? Do they love Jesus? That would kind of be where I would start. Because if you do and they don't, I don't care how pretty they are or how good looking they are, it ain't gonna work. Do they love Jesus? Do they serve others? You know what that reveals? Are they all about themselves or do they have a bigger picture of the world? Do they serve others? How do they respond when they're angry or having a bad day? That would reveal some character. Do they get jealous very easily? Are they always on guard? Are they just riddled with trust issues and assuming negative things all the time? Do they complain often? Do they grumble often? Do they always seem to be in a cranky mood? And you keep telling yourself, no, it'll get better. These are character revealers. How well do they submit to leadership in their life? Ladies, if your dude is like, I ain't submitting to people, I'm my own man, he's going to have a real hard time submitting to Jesus in that marriage. I'm going to go ahead and tell you.
Submission to leadership is a mark of character. It requires humility. These are things to look for when it comes to character. That's what should be the most alluring thing about someone, because that is way more substance than just looks. Now, looks plus character. Hey, we got a winning combo there. Go after that person. So, what if we kind of redefined the cultural flow here? And what if we changed attraction to a different word? And I want to suggest tonight that there are four things I think could be building blocks of a healthy dating relationship. And the first, instead of attraction, which is not wrong but is not enough, I would change this to chemistry. Chemistry. Let's take a look. Song of Solomon, chapter 1, verses 7 and 8. This woman is writing to Solomon. She says, "Tell me, you whom my soul loves." She got it bad, y'all. Like, "Tell me, you whom my soul loves, where you pasture your flock, where you make it lie down at noon. For why should I be like one who veils herself beside the flock of your companions?" You know what she's basically saying? Old Testament books are riddled with Hebrew poetry and artistic language and very expressive and figurative things. Really what she's saying is, tell me where you're going to be and at what time. Why would I want to conceal myself by hanging out with your friends as some weird approach to get to you? Just tell me where you're going to be and at what time, and I'll be there. Where do your flocks lie down at noon? Why would I veil myself beside the flocks of your companions? Look at how Solomon responds, verse 8. "If you really don't know, oh, most beautiful among women." Ooh! Come on now, ladies. "Follow in the tracks of the flock and pasture your young goats beside the shepherd's tents." Very artistic, very expressive. Basically, what he's saying is, if you really want to know how to find me, just follow the tracks. You know where I'll be. So you know what's going on here? They're expressing chemistry with one another. She's expressing her attraction to him, and he is reciprocating. "Tell me where you're going to be at noon, and I want to be there." "I'll tell you where I'm going to be. Just follow. You'll find me." He's not playing some weird game like, "Girl, I don't know. You know how I be. I kind of like to keep it loose. You know, I fly around a little bit. I might be there. I might be there. Cookout. Who knows, man?" He's not being weird. He's being very upfront. "I've led a path. I've made a trail. I'm easy to find." For chemistry to work, take a note of this, for chemistry to work, it has to be mutual. This is going to be a tough pill for some of you to swallow. It has to be mutual. Verse 7, she's asking where he's going to be because she wants to be there with him. Verse 8, he's telling her how to find him. That's mutual chemistry. Guys, let's be real. Some of you all have been hanging out in the friend zone for a real long time, thinking if I just hang out in the friend zone long enough, eventually I'm going to move into the end zone. Friend zone to end zone doesn't happen. It's not mutual. I'm going to save you some pain here. Move on. Let her go. Ladies, works the same way. Some of you guys have been holding out for Prince Charming. "Man, it's him. I know it's him. He doesn't see me yet, but I know he will." Take your shot. Let your attraction lead to something. Look at, she's bold, man. She don't care. "Hey, tell me where you're going to be. I'll be there." She took a shot, and he reciprocated. "This is where I'm going to be. I want to hang out. I want to be with you too." It's got to be mutual. If it's one-sided, you don't have chemistry. You might be attracted, but you don't have chemistry. Chemistry has to be mutual. Here's the danger of this in our culture. Our culture pushes this weird game, man, and it's so confusing. And guys, I've been there. I've shared my high school brokenhearted story about my friend zone experience. Like, you guys remember it. 5 years, reigning champ, all right? You'd be 5 years, really? Here's the deal. Our culture pushes this weird idea that girls, you have to play hard to get. If a guy says he likes you, make it a little hard for him. Play hard to get. Be a little confusing. Be a little mysterious. Right? Hello? Yes? Okay, thank you. It's all over movies in Hollywood and like culture everywhere. Like, hey, don't make it too easy on this jabroni. Play a little hard to get. Play a little game of chase. I'm gonna tell you right now, remember my wife is teaching with me February 21st. She'll be here with me and we're gonna teach. I'll tell you right now, we're gonna share this story. But during our attraction phase, when I was trying to figure out, is this even gonna work? It became so confusing that I finally told her, look, I believe the guy should pursue the girl, but at some point you gotta stop running. I need to know if you're in this thing. Because it just became, like, I don't know what we're doing. I need to, I'm in, baby girl. Like, are you? Because you give me signals and then you're kind of flaky. I don't know. But our culture pushes this weird game that you got to play hard to get. You got to play a little game of cat and mouse. Please don't do that. Don't. Just be straight up. Be straightforward. Let your character be what they're attracted to. And if they make a move and you're interested and you're attracted to their character, reciprocate. But if you're not interested, let them go. Make it clear. Hey, I'm not into you. And dudes, let me tell you, if they say that, don't categorize it in the back of your mind that's like, if I try harder. I mean, you see it all the time, right? The movie The Notebook, I was talking with Rachel about it this week and Brinley about it this week. I'm like, I mean, here's the classic scenario. Sweethearts when they're young, he leaves, he comes back into town, she's engaged to a new dude, he starts rebuilding this house, she kind of swings around because she's curious about this thing. And then all of a sudden he's like, what do you want? And she's like, it's not that simple. She doesn't want him, and the harder he tries, eventually she breaks and she gives in, and they are friends. And that's the message. It's like, hey, if she said no, what she really means is try harder. The hard thing with that is she may have said no and really meant no, and the harder you try, the creepier you get. So just stop playing games. Let chemistry be mutual. And can we just be upfront with each other? Like, yo, I'm into you. I'm attracted to you. Shoot the shot. And if it falls flat, move on. Stop with the games already. Let chemistry be mutual. Yes? Wouldn't that be a much better world? Some of you guys are looking at me like angry. This is a better world, people. Like no games, no dances, just straight up. It's better. Where are you going to be? I want to be there. He says, here's how to find me. Very mutual chemistry. All right, now we come to this stage of the dating relationship. Talking. We were talking, but now we're talking. With quotation marks, which somehow is a signal for, I don't know, we're exploring if we want to be together. I don't know, man. Talking. All right, so here's the deal. Let's be honest. This is a confusing stage. There's really no clear direction. You're kind of exploring, is there something here? Because it's mostly based on attraction and not mutual chemistry. So talking really means, yeah, we're like flirting, we're hanging out, we're having intentional one-on-one time. We're just trying to see if there's something there. But it becomes very confusing because nothing's defined. There's no timeline. There's no direction. There's no real clear conversation of expectations. What do you want out of this? What are you expecting out of this? Here's what I think. Here's how I feel. It just all becomes drawn out over months and months and months and months and becomes very confusing and honestly sometimes boring and frustrating and kind of lackluster. Like, this is not a fun stage when it's just talking. But what if we rename talking to communication? Very different. Let's take a look. Song of Solomon, chapter 1, verse 9. I compare you, this is Solomon. I compare you, my love, to a mare among Pharaoh's chariots. Ladies in the room, I know your deepest desire has always been to be compared to a horse. I know deep down. I just wish my boo would call me a horse one time. I compare you, my love, to a mare among Pharaoh's chariots. Verse 10 is a little bit better. Your cheeks are lovely with ornaments. In other words, you got rosy cheeks. They look so nice. And your neck with a string of jewels. So what is Solomon doing here? I'll tell you what he's doing. And guys, you need to listen up because this is important. Solomon is speaking words of life into his woman. The book of James says the tongue can be used as a destructive weapon. The things you say can kill or heal. And Solomon is using his words to bring life into this woman. Girls, I don't care how pretty you are, how attractive you are, how secure you are in yourself, and how confident you are, and all those are great qualities, and I admire them. But all of us, guys included, have baggage and insecurities. And girls, it is so easy for you, as I have discovered in my years of student ministry and through conversations with my wife, it is so easy for you to play the comparison game and to get on social media and to look at that girl's body and wish it was yours and to look at that girl's life and wish you had it and to compare to where you have no joy in who you are anymore and you're riddled with your insecurities. It's not that guys don't suffer from that. It's just a little bit different. But look at what Solomon is doing. This is really important. We'll come back to the chapter 2, verses 1 and 2. Go to Song of Solomon, chapter 1, verse 6 real quick. I got a slide for that one. Look at this. This is the woman speaking, and she says, "Don't gaze at me because I am dark, because the sun has looked upon me. My mother's sons were angry with me. They made me keeper of the vineyards, but my own vineyard I have not kept." Again, artistic language. What is she saying? She's saying, in my family, I was forced to work the vineyards. I worked out in the fields, and the sun would beat down on me all day. And it made me tan. What's interesting is, like, in our culture, that's like, yo, yeah, girl, get it, sun bath. But in other cultures, like Chinese culture today, pale skin is what's considered the mark of beauty. Different cultures have different standards. In this culture, apparently, a paler skin was the mark of beauty. Because she's saying, look, my mother's sons were angry with me. They made me keeper of the vineyards. I had to work outside all day. I toiled under the sun. The sun looked upon me. Please don't gaze at me because I'm dark. And when she says, I haven't had time to keep up my own vineyard I have not kept. Really what she's saying there is, I've worked the land, but I haven't worked on myself. I haven't had time to make myself pretty. Please, please don't gaze at me because I look different than all the other women. So when Solomon says to her, go back to verse 9, when Solomon says to her, I compare you, my love, to a mare among Pharaoh's chariots. Pharaoh always, always, always had Arabian white horses in his kingdom. Solomon is looking at this woman and recognizing her insecurities because she's voiced them. Please, please don't look down on me because I'm darker. The sun beat down on me. I couldn't take care of myself. I had to work in the fields. And Solomon is saying to me, you are like a white Arabian horse. You stand out among the others. He's speaking towards her insecurities. Guys, take a note. He's not criticizing her. He's not planting seeds in her mind with things he's dissatisfied with. He's speaking life into her insecurities, comparing her to the most beautiful of horses, which are brilliant white. So communication needs to be life-giving, and it also needs to be clear. It needs to have some clear direction. So look at Song of Solomon chapter 2, verses 1 and 2. This is the woman. She says, I'm a rose of Sharon, a lily of the valleys. Seems like her confidence is building. In chapter 1, she's kind of insecure. Please don't look at me. I'm dark. I've been working the fields. And now, because of his words of life, she's starting to see herself for who she is. He spoke life into her. She says, I'm a rose of Sharon, a lily among the valleys. And verse 2, he says, he responds with, as a lily among brambles, so is my love among the young women. Look what he, among all the women, they're like thorns and brambles, and you are like a lily, a beautiful blossoming flower in the middle of all this. Wow. So communication is not only life-giving, it's clear in direction. She is speaking about her feelings. He is speaking about his feelings. Communication is life-giving, and it is clear. Now, that's what they're saying to one another. But there's another element of communication. Not what you are saying, but what are other people saying? What are other people saying? Take a look at Song of Solomon chapter 1, verse 11. All throughout Song of Solomon, we have these kind of unique verses where it's like He's talking to her, she's talking to him, and then all of a sudden it's just labeled others. It's like what the community is saying about their love. And what the community responds with is, we will make for you ornaments of gold and studded with silver. In other words, the community is rejoicing in their love for one another. Now, I think there's a principle we can learn from here, which is, if you find yourself attracted to someone and you move forward in terms of identifying your feelings and your direction and your intentions, and your closest friends come around you and try to speak wisdom into this, saying, whoa, pump the brakes, time out, pause. We know something about their character which you may not see, and we have some concerns. You need to pause. Your closest friends want your best. They will not try to derail love for the sake of harming you. They want your best, not your worst. Therefore, they're trying to look out for you. If godly counsel is in your life saying, hey, listen, I know they are so incredibly attractive. I know there's some mutual chemistry. But listen, there's things about their character that we know, that we've seen, that has been revealed that you just haven't seen yet. And you need to pause and take it slower or bail out altogether. At the very least, you need to consider what they're saying. But what I found over the years is, if we really like someone and we really are attracted to someone, we just move forward kind of in foolishness. And when people say, hey, wait, wait, pause, there's things there. There's yellow flags, there's red flags. We say, you just don't want me to be happy. You're jealous. And we convince ourselves that because they disapprove, it's actually the right thing. And then what's even worse is sometimes we go and seek advice from people that we know will already agree with us. Just to affirm what we want to hear. Yeah, you get it. You go, man, you date who you want. Nobody can tell you not to do that. We seek affirmation from people we know will validate the foolishness we're pursuing. That's not wisdom. What does the community say about your relationship? What does godly counsel say about your relationship? Take a look at this verse, Proverbs 12, verse 15. Says this, the way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but a wise man listens to advice. If you're convinced you're right and everyone else is wrong, they're giving you wisdom, they're giving you advice. Hey, stop, wait, 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 we don't approve. There's things here, there's cautions here, there's yellow flags. And you're saying, nope, I know I'm right. Why? Because I just feel like God has spoken to my heart and told me to pursue this person. God does speak to our hearts through his Spirit, and he also speaks to us through his people. And when his Spirit and his people line up with the advice, I would say you probably have a green light. Please don't justify foolishness because you're so attracted that you'll overlook character flaws just to move forward in a relationship. You will find yourself in a lot of pain. Some of you have figured this out the hard way. So, communication for each other should be life-giving and clear. From others should be affirming and met with approval. All right, let's look. What if we got here this, it's complicated. Oh, it's just so complicated, man. We don't know where we're at. What if we changed it's complicated, this hazy, mysterious, ambiguous, vague description, Facebook status description. What if we changed it? What if we started discovering compatibility with someone? Wow, what a life that would be. I'm not confused. We're not floating in no man's land. We're discovering that we're actually compatible for one another. This is such a huge thing within relationships. Let me tell you, if you're attracted to someone and you guys have mutual chemistry and you have great communication, but you're not compatible, bail. Just get out. It'll save you so much pain. Here's what I mean is like I've actually met with and counseled couples who are like, the girl is like, I'm 100% convinced that God is leading me to be a missionary in some remote village in Africa. I'm like, yes, they need the gospel. And the guy's like, I'm 100% convinced that God is keeping me here in the States to pursue business. And I'm like, great. Businessmen need Jesus too. So how are you going to make it work? Because both of you can't actually move forward in this relationship convinced one's going overseas and one's staying in the States. Well, if I just date him long enough, he'll come around to my calling. Maybe, maybe not. Well, if we just stay together long enough, we'll figure it out. I'm not sure you will. There has to be compatibility. You have to look at who you are and who they are and actually see, man, do they actually go together well? Is this a good fit? The way God wired me and the way God wired them, are they complementary or are they contradictory? You know the old sayings, opposites attract? That's true. Oh, she's so different than me. This is great. I love it. Man, I'm so attracted to her. Opposites do attract for a while, but after a while, opposites attack. Are you compatible with this person? Let's take a look. Song of Solomon, chapter 2, verses 8 and 9. The voice of my beloved. Behold, he comes, leaping over the mountains, bounding over the hills. My beloved is like a gazelle or a young stag. Behold, there he stands behind our wall, gazing through the windows, looking through the lattice. Some of you guys are like, what, wait, what? Creeper. The woman is describing Solomon here. She's like, he's like a deer, bam, 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 leaping down the mountains. And look, there he stands behind our wall. I see him. Seeing me, gazing through the windows, pressed up against them, looking through the lattice. This is creepy. This is weird. This is stalker status. Relationship should be over. But remember, it's artistic language. It's descriptive. It's figurative. It's not literal. Guys, please don't take this literal. Do not go to the girl's house. Do not drive in her suburbs. Please. Just when you see those stop signs and red lights, do not see his face in the white cars. Just keep moving on, okay? It's not literal. Here's what she's saying. Red lights and stop. Here's what she's saying. She's saying, it's figurative. What she's saying is, he sees my stuff. He sees the real me. This is not some shallow relationship. This is not purely attraction. My beloved has come and pursued me and leapt over the mountains and come down, and he's seeing my stuff. It's this description of he's seeing me when I'm at my most basic. He's seeing me when I'm at my most crazy. He's seeing me in private, not in a weird way. It's like when I'm losing my cool, if he can't handle my crazy, he doesn't deserve my best. Like that whole dumb thing. It's like my beloved is seeing me for me. He's seeing the real me, the version of me that nobody else sees. He's seeing the authentic me. You know why this is so amazing? It's because he doesn't go anywhere. He sees this woman in her crazy, so to speak. He sees this woman in her insecurities. He sees this woman at her worst, and he still pursues her like a deer leaping down the mountains. That is compatibility. I see you at your worst and I still love you. That's compatibility. Sometimes I counsel couples getting ready for marriage and I'm like, hey, tell me about what's the worst fight you've ever had? I want to hear when you guys were like, at it. And they're like, oh, we don't fight. And I'm like, red flag. You don't fight because you really are that harmonious, or you just avoid conflict. One of you is passive, one of you is dominating and speaks down and belittles the other to the point where they shrink away and they don't really know how to engage the conflict very well. They don't have a voice, so you don't know what they want, and now they're just submissive in an unhealthy way. He sees my stuff, the real me, and he sticks around. Compatibility. Chapter 2, verse 15, look at this. He catches the foxes for us. The little foxes that spoil the vineyards. Our vineyards are in blossom. Vineyards throughout chapter 2 is a description of their love. Their love is compared to springtime, blooming with its fragrant aromas. And in this description, foxes have come along and begun to ruin the vineyards. They're eating away at the vineyards. They're destroying the vineyards. And look, catch the foxes for us, the little foxes. In other words, again, figurative language, artistic language. In other words, our relationship, our vineyard, has problems that are destructive, and we will address them and deal with them. We're not going to let little foxes run around and destroy our love. Our love is in blossom. We're in the prime time of our relationship. And these little foxes running around want to destroy this, our insecurities, our doubts, our confusions. No, 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 no. We're going to figure this stuff out. We'll catch these foxes. We'll deal with our stuff. Most relationships get to this point.
I think for high school dating, maybe it happens around 3 months. I don't know. It's like when the attraction wears off and it's like, it's complicated now. We're annoyed. We don't know what to talk about now. What should we do? Get physical? I don't know. And it's like, hold on, pause. Deal with your stuff. You want to know the best ways to deal with someone else's stuff?
Is to deal with your own stuff.
Stop focusing on them. Deal with yourself. This goes back to the week one sermon of relationships. Find your identity in Jesus, your foundation in Jesus. Know who you are so you can know what you're looking for. And then, because you know how to talk and communicate, you can start to deal with your stuff. But when you don't know how to do that, it just becomes complicated. How do I tell them I'm not attracted to them anymore? Because I saw they're crazy. We don't know how to commit because we're used to hookup culture, or at least that's what our culture pushes. Temporary bursts of physical attraction, act upon it. Oh, nothing there, move on. So we really don't know how to commit beyond that and deal with the stuff. They're learning compatibility through their commitment. All right, finally, here we go. Physical. I want you to know something. I think the church, capital C, the overall church, has done a really poor job at teaching on sex and intimacy and physical sexual desires, things like that. Because I think overall it's kind of been presented as this like, sex, don't do it, right? Like, and that's kind of been the bottom line message. When in fact, sex was created by God for us to enjoy with one another. However, it was created in a proper context. It'd be like if you have a house with a fireplace and you love fires, but you decide to start a fire in your kitchen instead of your fireplace, same thing, can't be contained. Has a much more destructive effect in one place than the other. God has created this, but for its proper place and time. And when it's found in its proper place and time, man, you can stoke that fire. You want to keep it going. You want to build it. You're not worried about putting it out because it's burning the house down. Sexual desires are not wrong. If you have them, that's normal. If you're in a relationship and that relationship is growing and the intimacy is developing and you find yourself like, I'm really attracted to them and kind of craving some things. Like, yeah, that's normal and healthy as long as it's paired with boundaries. I know I just killed some of you guys because we went CCCB. Matt, I need the alliteration. Repetition of initial consonant sounds. Yeah, I get it. If it really is bugging you, if it's really bugging you, just use the word confines. Confines. I just figured boundaries is a much more common word. And maybe you even remember it because it's not a C. And you're like, oh, B. Oh, boundaries. Physical desires, intimate desires, sexual desires are good and healthy and normal and created by God. They're a part of this whole thing. They're not sinful in and of themselves. They are healthy paired with boundaries. They're not healthy when they're just freedom, like do whatever you want, whenever you want, like no. You're gonna find a lot of pain that way. Unfortunately, that's kind of what our culture pushes. We need boundaries. So again, let's look. Song of Solomon, chapter 1, verse 16 and 17. Keep in mind, artistic language, figurative language. Behold, you are beautiful, my beloved, truly delightful. Our couch is green. All right. Yeah, boy. Been looking for one like that. Our couch is green. The beams of our house are cedar. Our rafters are pine. Like, oh, man's describing his framing, very attractive. No, here's what they're saying. You're beautiful. You're delightful. Our couch is green. You know what this means? Where we hang out, where we recline, where we spend our time is green. I'm talking about outside. I'm talking about grass. The beams of our house, like where we spend our time, our house where we live, trees, cedar, rafters are pine. It's talking about being outside. It's got this strong attraction. They're communicating. They're compatible. And what do they say? We're not going to be in private. How foolish would that be? Of course we have sexual desires for one another. Why would we ever ever
go into a room and shut the door and pretend like nothing would happen. We're going to spend our time outside where people can see us. We have boundaries around this thing. And guys, I know it always starts innocent. Like, oh, my parents were home when you got here, but they just left real quick to run an errand. Should you leave? Oh, that's so inconvenient. No, they'll be back in 15 minutes. Like, I get it. Sometimes it just starts as innocent as anything. But we all know how deceitful those things can be. They're talking about, we're in the public eye. We're not going to be in private. We know how this fire is burning. We don't want to awaken it too soon. And then one last passage. Let's look. Chapter 2, verses 3 and 7. This is as heated as I'm going to get tonight. As an apple tree among the trees of the forest, so is my beloved among the young men. She's speaking about him. He's an apple tree. With great delight I sat in his shadow, and his fruit was sweet to my taste. He brought me to the banqueting house, and his banner over me was love. Love in the Song of Solomon, by the way, is the Hebrew word ahava, which means the love of the will. He's choosing to love her. It's a choice. It's a commitment. Sustain me with raisins. Refresh me with apples, for I'm sick with love. Hebrew culture, Old Testament culture, apples and raisins were kind of sensual fruits. She's speaking in a very intimate way. Sustain me with raisins. I think our culture would say, girl's thirsty. Girl's thirsty. Give me them raisins, boy. His left hand is under my head, and his right hand embraces me. Now, I'm going to pause there because I want to look at verse 7 in a minute. All of this, she's describing desires. She's describing desires. He has spoken life into her. She feels safe around him. She feels secure around him. She has insecurities, but he's speaking into those. They're building trust. They have a mutual chemistry. They're speaking life in clear ways. Community is approving. They are not complicating things. They're not muddying the waters, but they're being clear in their direction and directive, and they're finding they're compatible because they're dealing with their issues with one another, and he's seeing her at her worst, and he's staying. The ahava love, he's committing to be with her. And so all of this is leading to, man, I'm feeling stuff. Like, I'm feeling some stuff. But look at how this passage ends. I adjure you, I beg you, O daughters of Jerusalem, by the gazelles or the does of the field, that you do not stir up love or awaken it until it pleases. She is being very honest about her desires. Man, I need some raisins. Girl needs some raisins and apples right now. Like, she's being very honest about this. I'm stirred up. I got desires. And then she ends it with this. But I'm begging you. Please don't move this thing too fast. Don't take the fire from the fireplace and put it in the kitchen. I'm begging you, please don't awaken it or stir it up until it's the right time. In fact, all throughout the Song of Solomon, as sensual as a book as it is and as romantic and heated as it can get, this refrain comes over and over and over and over. Do not stir up love or awaken it before it's the right time. Sexual desires in and of themselves are not wrong. It's how God created all of us. But without boundaries, they become dangerous. Culture convinces us they're fine to move on, and then all this gets rearranged. We become very confused. God is saying, no, I want you to have sex. Those desires are good. I want you to enjoy that with the person that you're choosing to love in the covenant of marriage, which is a lifelong partnership, because sex is not just a coming together of the body. It is a fusion of souls. And one of the most dangerous things you can do is weld your soul to someone else, only to try to tear it away because you don't have a lifelong commitment with them. And the woman, knowing this, is saying, man, I got the desires. They're there. Woo, this dude, he's making me feel safe and good. He's speaking life into my securities. We're attracted to one another, compatible chemistry, communicating. Woo, this guy has character. I want him. I need some raisins. But I will not awaken love before the proper time. That's what she's saying. We have to have boundaries on our desires. They're not wrong. But expressed freely and openly and without boundaries, they're dangerous. And that's when it becomes wrong. The Song of Solomon is teaching us a template for healthy relationships, dating relationships, which I get. It's hard in high school because you're still learning so much about yourself. How could you possibly know exactly what you're trying to find in someone else?
Do you have mutual chemistry?
It goes both ways.
Are you communicating, speaking life into one another's insecurities? Being clear with the direction you're going? Are you finding approval from your community and godly wisdom? Are you compatible? Are you finding that you guys complement one another? That you're working through your stuff in healthy ways? You're maturing in the relationship and growing? That you're taking care of the foxes that are destroying the relationship? Seeing each other at the worst and yet still extending grace and love? And are you placing boundaries around the sexual desires, the desires to be physical with one another? That will inherently grow. That's a natural part of who you are. You can't turn those off, but you can place boundaries. How? I mean, they had a great one. Don't be in private. When you go on dates, get outside. But Matt, it's cold. I get it. Bring a quilt. One for you, one for her. Okay. I think the Song of Solomon is showing us a healthy template, which is counter what culture would teach us. This seems to be, even though the Bible doesn't have a specific passage about dating, this seems to be a natural progression that we see through a lot of wisdom in the Song of Solomon.
Let's pray together.
Jesus, we love you, and we thank you so much for your word. Even though it's not specific in terms of dating and speaking about dating, it is very specific in terms of all these principles we've talked about tonight. I pray for every person in this room, every person who is in a dating relationship or going to be in a dating relationship, that we would discover some healthy principles of dating. I pray that we would know that culture pushes an idea and an agenda that makes us blind to what truly healthy relationships are. And that the greatest relationships and the most intimate relationships and the relationships that we feel the safest in and most loved in and most celebrated in and most secure in are actually found by doing things according to your word. We're seeing this couple and their romance grow and blossom in this story, in your word. You are the author of sex. You are the author of intimacy and romance. Would you help us, Father, do things according to your word because you desire our good and our pleasure. We ask these things, Jesus, in your name. Amen.